From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now, and the death toll is mounting in Ukraine. Anti-government protesters say dozens of people have been killed battling with riot police in the capital city of Kiev. The Ukrainian Interior Ministry says protesters have captured dozens of police officers.
And in a statement, President Obama urged Ukraine's president to immediately withdraw security forces from downtown Kiev. The German, Polish, and French foreign ministers are holding emergency meetings with President Yanukovych and opposition leaders to try to broker some kind of agreement. And in Brussels, the BBC is reporting that European foreign ministers meeting there have agreed to sanction individuals, including the use of visa bans and asset freezes. These are freezes for individuals responsible for this violence. Before that news, about an hour ago, we spoke with the BBC's Matthew Price and asked him about potential sanctions and about what was going on in Brussels.
Well, we have 25 EU foreign ministers in Brussels. The other three, as you've said, are in Kiev, the Ukrainian capital. In Brussels, they are discussing whether or not to impose sanctions on Ukraine. I was told late last night by one source that such sanctions would include perhaps an arms embargo, perhaps stopping the export of riot gear to Ukraine, for instance, but not at that stage sanctions directly targeted at individuals, although they would hold out the threat of doing that in the future if things got worse. Since that discussion with that source, of course, things have got a lot worse. It'll be interesting to see if they decide to toughen up their approach.
You talk about right now they're not talking about sanctions against specific individuals, sanctions that would not allow them to travel, that might freeze bank accounts. Is this just individuals in the government?
Yeah.
Or because the government, of course, says that in the protesters there are right-wing, almost paramilitary groups.
And there are. I was in Ukraine just a few weeks ago at another upsurge in this violence and spoke to a lot of those people, some who have been members of right-wing, pretty nasty, racist, neo-Nazi groups for much of their lives, others who had come along to join the fight and got involved in the groups. It's by no means a majority of the protesters, but the ones that you see being particularly violent on the side of the protesters are indeed those sort of people, not all of them. Now, the EU is having to be pretty nuanced about it. They do recognise it's a complex situation on the ground. But it's interesting, isn't it, that those old Cold War fault lines are being drawn out again in policy terms. Both Barack Obama and EU ministers talking about the responsibility for all this lying in President Yanukovych's hands. Moscow, Russia, talking about the responsibility for the violence lying with the protesters.
Well, meanwhile, you mentioned the three EU ministers that are in Kiev meeting with President Yanukovych, German, Polish, and French foreign ministers. What is that conversation expected to be like?
Well, there are chances, said one EU source, for a compromise between the president, his government, and the opposition. Most observers will say they would have thought that the EU's room for influence here was pretty limited. However, you also have to assume it is in nobody's interests for the violence to get even worse, certainly not the very, very rich oligarchs of Ukraine, who a number of whom have been making pretty strongly worded statements saying they need and want the violence to end, whether they are supporters of the opposition or supporters of President Yanukovych. So the pressure is certainly on him to do something in which he can calm the situation and yet, from his perspective, continue to hold on to power. And remember, this is a man who, the EU will tell you, was democratically elected.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned these Cold War fault lines. The U.S. and Russia are trading accusations over who's meddling most in Ukraine. And we remember this all started when the EU made a demand of Ukraine that in order to have a trade agreement with the EU, Ukraine would not be able to have its financial relationship that it had always had with Russia. Are people raising the question, as Stephen Cohen, a Russian scholar, is in a very provocative article in The Nation, why did the EU make that demand of a country that's so divided? He points out what's rarely heard in reporting, that half the country, Ukraine, is not standing with these protesters. They want to keep the relations with Russia and not with the EU.
Well, yes, the EU was making certain demands of Ukraine, but within the text of this agreement. President Putin of Russia wants to set up his own trade union, and Ukraine is absolutely pivotal to that. Without Ukraine in his association, it's really worth nothing, because it's a collection of Russia plus a number of pretty small, relatively trivial states in economic terms. So there's the big geopolitical tussle. You're right to talk about largely a 50-50 split in Ukraine, but this has also become more than just about Europe versus Russia inside Ukraine. It's also become about the president himself, about allegations and perceptions of his cronyism, his corruption. And one of the reasons why there are fears, and heightened today, of if not a civil war in Ukraine, at least a split in the country, is precisely because, broadly speaking, the western part of the country is more pro-European, and broadly speaking, the eastern part of the country is more pro-Russian.
The BBC's Matthew Price in Brussels, where EU leaders are debating a response to that deepening split in Ukraine and the violence. Matthew, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.